The new structure is obviously replaces the 10 strategic health authorities, which more recently have been grouped together into bigger strategic health authorities. The 10 strategic health authorities replaced by NHS England, or as it's now called, the NHS Commissioning Board, which is a centralised body. That in turn will have local area teams that are covering more defined geographical areas. This, of course, all relates only to England and not to Scotland, Wales or to Northern Ireland. We're the lucky ones to actually get this, you might say. 200 plus, I think it's 211, 212 clinical commissioning groups, which are ostensibly led by GPs. There's a whole debate about the extent to which they're actually led by GPs and to which the GPs are actually involved in the leading or being actually dragged into it by a handful of GPs who have a particular motive, and steered, I think most will accept, by clinical commissioning support services, of which again there's a network being set up by NHS England. These commissioning support services will be servicing more than one CCG, and they are obviously made up in some cases of people from PCTs and strategic health authorities, in other cases drawing in other people. And by 2016, these have to in themselves be put out to tender, and there's an expectation in the private sector that a number of them will actually be scooped up by the private sector. The private sector is looking to a market of something around £1.2 billion from delivering services as part of this new arrangement, support services. The NHS, of course, in the context of the whole thing, is we still have this £20 billion target for efficiency savings by 2015, from 2010 to 2015, and that remains obviously an underlying pressure. New structures. You've been handed out, I hope you've all got the one we're getting to that. We'll start with a simple structure. This is a Nuffield Trust diagram. This is just the numbers. Department of Health still there, NHS Commissioning Board, now NHS England, 23 commissioning support services, 4 regional commissioning sectors, 27 local commissioning board offices, now called local area teams, 212 clinical commissioning groups, and then the actual providers of health services and so forth. That's the simple structure. Then you start to look at the ways it's actually going to work. Here you have the way it's set out. This again, Nuffield Trust slide, how it's seen in terms of accountability and advice. So you have a rather different looking structure, and here you have these various arrows, and the bodies that come into play are slightly more, you get slightly more bodies involved. You get the National Institute for Clinical Excellence involved. You've got Monitor involved, the regulator, which was originally just regulating Foundation Trust, but now regulates effectively most of the NHS operations, provider operations. Clinical, the Clinical Care Quality Commission, CQC. Local Health and Wellbeing Boards and Health Watch. Again, another layer of bodies. And the NHS Commissioning Board regional offices. So again, various relationships of monitoring and regulation. Then you get where we come in, or the patients and the media allegedly come in. We're right down the bottom here, by the way. This is us right down the bottom, trying to get a look in through voting. I don't know why there's a connection between media and voting. I don't quite understand that one. I think they've got that chart wrong. Through local involvement, and you can see actually, if the Nuffield Trust have got it right, then the media are a fair old arm's length from everything. They're right down the bottom here, and all the activity and decisions are being taken in the middle here, quite a long way away from any media scrutiny. Now, I'm not sure how much that's intended to be the case, how much they just ran out of spaces to put extra bubbles in the diagram, but that's the way it's actually drawn in here. You can see again you've got additional bodies being added in here. You've got social services being added in, local government ombudsman being added in, complaints bodies and patient advocacy liaison services, PALS, being added in here. In my experience, PALS are a broom cupboard with an answer phone in it that never ever seems to get attended to, but maybe somebody knows better in this room. Patient forums. Health Watch is here much more centrally. Health Watch And we'll be looking a little bit about that in a moment. And finally, this is the one that you've been handed out. This is actually drawn up by the Socialist Health Association, obviously before the PCTs and SHAs were abolished, so this has been slightly outdated by events. But this has got both the accountability and, of course, also the financing streams actually in there. And you can see how simple the new system is and how streamlined compared to what was there before. You've just bowled over by the simplicity and the elegance of it. You have here bodies which I've never found explained, clinical networks, clinical senates, and so on. And you've got all the providers are lumped together here. Any qualified providers, including charities, private sector, and NHS providers, are all lumped in here alongside foundation trusts. Interestingly, this diagram, bear in mind this is a Socialist Health Association, so I'm not sure if you want to take this as gospel. They've got all the elements on there. They haven't necessarily got the arrows in the right place. But they've got Monitor and the Cooperation and Competition Panel on the edge here, not apparently actually impinging on anything. I don't think that's quite right. I think they're going to play a much more central role than that. But you can see there's a level of complexity. And I think when we come onto this level of complexity, the question is, what do journalists need? What do we need in order to be able to do a proper job in terms of giving an account of what's going on in the NHS? We need, I think, access points where we can get information from. We need to be able to get it without waiting around and having to go through too many, jump through too many hoops and ring up too many obstacles in order to get through to what we want. We need timely information. We also, I think, want a proper range of information. I don't think we just want the tidbits they want to hand out as press releases and shape our entire coverage around what they want us to say rather than actually looking for what is actually going on. So the range of material that you used to get, for example, from Strategic Health Board, Health Authority board papers, trust board papers, and PCT board papers, that range of issues, which covers finance, covers performance, covers strategic planning, these type of issues, I think we need access to that as well if we're going to do a proper job of reporting. We want transparency, as far as possible, on the various arrangements for buying in services, because this is becoming more and more a factor in the NHS, and we don't want those all shrouded in business secrecy so that we don't know how much is being spent, we don't know where the money's going, and we don't know who is actually picking up the lion's share of the money that's actually being spent and circulated within this new system. And I think journalists also, if they're going to provide balanced stories, they need to be assured that it's not just them. If information is circulated, it's not just to journalists, accredited local journalists, but it's to enough people so that you can actually talk to people who are campaigners, who are local knowledgeable people, academics, people who are able to give a comment and a critique of what's going on, rather than simply the journalists themselves being, here it is, pick the bones out of that, you can talk to the chief executive or whatever, and get the authorised version. So I think that those are the important elements from the point of view of journalism. And you've got these different levels at which you're going to need information. And I think this is true wherever you are. If you're a local journalist, you still need some idea of what's going on nationally in the NHS. So we have, at national level, we have NHS England. NHS England appears to be very open. They have the webcast, I think, their last board meeting, and it looks like they're going to do that fairly frequently. They publish a fair number of their papers, I think possibly all of their papers, but actually reading their papers, they're astonishingly general, astonishingly vague, astonishingly boring, and actually maybe that's why they're so easy to access. Because actually when it comes down to it, the decisions that affect you if you're covering local issues as a local journalist is what's being decided by these local area teams. These are the ones going to be taking the nitty-gritty decisions about what's happening in specific localities. Now, there's a big question mark over that. How are they structured? How do they actually take decisions at all? What is the decision-making process there? Will they publish any agendas, any papers? Will we know how often they meet and when they're going to be announcing decisions? How are we going to find out? These are the key decisions that really do affect local services. How are we going to find that out? Are they subject to the Freedom of Information Act? We know that the NHS England is, but it's very difficult to frame a precise question of a local area team if you don't know where they come, what stage they are discussing a particular issue. You don't know what's on an agenda at any given time. and you don't know what papers or materials being circulated. It's very difficult to get that right. And as everybody knows who's tried FOI, if you don't have a precise question, you don't get an answer. And you have to be absolutely nailed down in making that question accurate. There's another big question over Public Health England. This is going to be managing, strategic planning, the development of public health through local authorities and through the health and wellbeing boards from there. But we don't know, as far as I'm aware, how open that is going to be and how many statements they're going to make and how much, in terms of overall documents, are going to be opened up for any kind of discussion or consultation, if there's just going to be pronouncements from on high that are just handed down to local councils. At the local level, we've got CCGs. We're told these will normally meet in public. Okay, normally is quite an important word, really. I live in Oxfordshire. They've just had a meeting which was actually held in secret, but they published the board papers. So, you know, a bit of a contradiction there. The board papers reveal they're starting out their first year. They're starting out with a deficit of £26 million, I think, and looking for ways of making savings from the very beginning. And they look at 4% plus savings and so forth. So you can get quite a lot from the board papers if you're not at the meetings, but you can't get the immediacy of the decision-making process, and it does appear to be in their gift to decide whether or not they meet in secret and so forth. There doesn't appear to be a regular requirement on them to actually meet in public. But more to the point, the commissioning support services that supply them with the information draw up a lot of the proposals and actually are the main bodies doing the day-to-day work of actually administering the commissioning process. They're not employed directly by the CCGs. It's questionable whether they're public employees at all. They don't appear to have any open process of meetings. We don't appear to know how they come to their decisions. We don't appear to be able to vet or investigate what the base of evidence is that they rely upon on making those decisions and proposals, which the GPs will then have to decide upon in these meetings. But they will basically be getting a series of options drawn up by these commissioning services. So this is a very important question, and we just don't know who's going to be vetting that. Foundation trusts. The boards must meet in public sometimes. Okay, they don't necessarily have to meet always in public. They have to publish their agendas to their boards of governors, but they don't necessarily have to publish them to the public. Now, maybe that will change, because obviously we're new into the new period since the Act. Maybe that will change. If we look at the period before the Act, it was a very substantial proportion of the Foundation Trust did not publish their board papers, and you couldn't get anything in relation, for example, to their finances between one annual report and the next. Now, big things happen between one annual report and the next in Foundation Trusts. If you look at Peterborough as a classic example, you know, they develop another £50 million of deficit between one annual report and the next. And, you know, so it's important to be able to keep track of that in order to know really what's going on. So this is a big, big question, and that's, as far as I know, unresolved. It was talked about that these would be opened up by the Health and Social Care Act. So far, I don't see any evidence of it. Maybe people in the room do, so I'm just raising this as a question. And you know, they are subject to the Freedom of Information Act, but again, you've got to know that's my 15 minutes. I couldn't believe it. Okay. There you are. It's a tough old life, isn't it? So that a vastly truncated. I will just flick through the screen so you just see, and then I'll stop. But this is an any qualified provider. I just wanted to flag this one up because, of course, non-NHS providers. There's a whole question about accountability. How do we know what they're really up to? What their balance sheets are? This one is called Minor Ops Limited. Right, it provides chiropody services in County Durham. I just picked this at random off the list. This is from the Supply to Health website. Okay, just picked this one at random because it's a chiropody service, a podiatry service in County Durham. But the main contact, name of providers, the first one on the list is actually an optometrist. Now, call me old-fashioned, but I thought eyes were at one end and feet were at the other, but there you go. So, you know, information can be sometimes not quite what it seems. And other bodies, whole questions to be asked about the other bodies, which are also playing a role in that, in terms of health and wellbeing boards and so forth, which again vary very strongly from one place to the other as to how they're run by local councils and the attitude they take to open information. And just finally, regulation and competition, and in particular, I'll draw your attention to these ones here. Professional, the Cooperation and Competition Panel. Now, we all knew about that. That was there before. That's now been integrated into Monitor. But they appear to have quite substantial powers to intervene. But when we come on to the Office of Fair Trading, I think that's a fairly new one. And they are now intervening regularly in discussions about mergers between foundation trusts, regarding foundation trusts as businesses, rather like Tesco's and Morrison's merging. And there are all kinds of questions in which competition might not necessarily be seen as the first principle that all of us want to reach for when we're talking about planning healthcare services. And finally, EU competition law. We have, of course, the whole discussion many of you will be aware of about the Section 75 regulations coming up for the debate in the House of Lords on the 24th of April. Part of that actually embodies the rhetoric of EU competition law, which is the right of a provider to provide. Now, I don't know how many of you really think that's a fundamental right that, again, is important to healthcare, or how many of you think it's compatible with healthcare. But these are increasingly factors. The question is, to what extent do they act openly? To what extent are they clear to journalists, and can journalists actually access information? And the question I'm going to raise, which flows neatly into Sean's contribution, it's a big job. Are the newsrooms up to it? Do we have the resources? Do we have the expertise? Do we have the commitment from editors? Do we have the commitment in terms of the public requiring requiring accurate information? Do we have the commitment to actually provide that information? So that's the points I'm going to make, as you can see, extremely briefly. And you're